Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 72 for October 7, 2010. This is Michael Loft. Tonight's topic, we're going to speak with a group of blind parents, myself included, and share experiences and help those getting started, give you some great tips and online resources, maybe make your life just a little bit easier. And we all learn through trial and error. Joining me tonight is Mike Calvo.
Hi there.
He would be the granddaddy with five, right?
Wow. Yeah, it's something like that. It's either the granddaddy or the rabbit. Who knows?
Yeah. And then we have Deborah Kendrick, renowned author, joining us this evening and columnist. Thank you. And you have three children, right?
So that's I do indeed. Hello.
And then we have Ricky Inger. Good old Ricky.
Hello.
And her son, Kyle. And yours truly, Michael Loft, with a 22-year-old son who got his first gig based on his college career today. And he's very excited. And I adopted a daughter as well, and we'll talk about all that coming up. Just want to quickly mention, coming up next week, October 14th, it's video magnifiers, the desktop models, the larger ones for those that need a little more horsepower. So I do want to remind folks that, again, the comments expressed in this tech chat, as well as our podcasts, are those of the individuals and do not necessarily represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, and third-party resellers. So with that, we're going to go through and cover a number of different topics tonight as we get rolling. And I guess one of the first things that I want to ask everyone here maybe is, who do I start with? I'm going to start with you, Ricky. What would you say was the most difficult challenge that you had as being a blind parent? Was there something you just thought would be cake and all of a sudden you're just like, wow, this is, I didn't quite expect this to happen?
The biggest challenge for me, and I did think that it was going to be a little bit difficult, and it turned out to be even a lot more difficult than I anticipated, was keeping up with my child in a very noisy or wide-open environment. So either Chuck E. Cheese or, say, out in the park. And just things like that where even if you have bells on the child's shoes or whatever, it's difficult to hear in that kind of environment, and certainly you want to allow your kids to run around and be kids, so you can't really have them tethered to you in an environment like that. So that was something that I found very, very difficult to do on my own, and when I was in situations where I needed to, I was spending a lot of time being very nervous, and I couldn't sort of sit back and enjoy just being a parent, hanging out with my child in a place like that.
So, Deborah, how do you feel about that? I mean, I held on to my son's hand, but you're right, sometimes you'd get to an event and you want to have them the freedom to move around, and then you just pay attention exactly where he is, right? Go to the park. Next thing I knew, he was 30 feet up in a tree. You know, what was your experience?
Well, first of all, I addressed the park situation by creating a park in our backyard. We were very fortunate at the time that my children were young to live in a home that had a very large yard. We fenced it in and we put in a tremendous play set, and so our house was the place to play when I did take them to the park and so forth. I trained my friends to not run to my child or when anything was happening, but to tell me so that my children always saw me as being in complete charge and complete control. For me, the greatest challenge was other people. When we enrolled in new schools or new classrooms, I learned very quickly that things were not going to go well if I didn't put myself out there in ways that wouldn't have been natural to me, to educate the teachers and the parents very quickly that we were just another family and that we did things differently. But that was definitely the toughest part, was the perception of other people that I was a different kind of parent.
And we'll get to schooling in just a moment, but I do want to ask about reading to your children. And I know people have used different techniques. Some folks have used Braille. Some used books with cassettes that accompany them and beep every time you're supposed to turn the page. And some folks now even using iPads. So I'm curious what methods you have used in reading and educating your children.
Reading has always been a really important thing for me because I'm an avid reader, and I wanted to instill that love of reading in my child as well. So from a very young age, I was determined that reading was going to be a part of something that we did. And my husband is sighted, and yes, he certainly could have read to our son and did on occasion, but I don't think that he had the same passion for it that I did. So again, very determined to do that. I started out reading books from places like Seedlings or National Braille Press, where the books were print Braille. And of course, he was too young to read the print at the time, but I think that it did help to see the letters, and the pictures were in those books as well. Now, as he got older, that became a little bit more of a challenge because the print Braille books there weren't quite as many for his age range. So what I did for a while was I would make up my own stories. You know, it wasn't necessarily the act of reading. It was the act of sharing a story, whether it was my own or somebody else's. So I would make up my own stories, and that worked really well. And then I was lucky enough to get an iPhone, and there's iBooks on that. And that works well if he wants to see the pictures, but Samantha reading to him doesn't work quite so well. If I had a Braille display that paired with it, that would be nice, but I don't. I do, however, have a Braille display that I can load books onto, so I'm able to read to him in Braille, and occasionally we're reading something that he can check out from the library and follow along to see the pictures.
I used to, but interestingly enough, I actually got a lot of the Braille books that that I have read to several of my kids, believe it or not, from Deborah.
Yes, you did.
I met this nice lady named Deborah Kendrick when I actually joined up online, and I was like, man, I got to find books, you know, because so far I'd been doing kind of what Ricky did, were making up stories or telling them Goldilocks and the Three Bears and stuff like that. And, you know, and I put an email message out one time, and this very nice lady who I did not know who the heck she was sent me this huge box of books that have now, after my kids have traveled on to another couple of blind parents here and there. And NBP has really, National Braille Press really was a savior for us. A lot of the kids really enjoyed the pictures and stuff. And it helped me because I'm not the fastest out loud Braille reader either. Braille is kind of my second or third language, but it really was great, and it's awesome to be able to share that and also descriptive videos. I'll never forget the first time we got to sit down and watch The Grinch That Stole Christmas described. It was very emotional, very touching for me because I was finally able to watch a described video with my kids, and you know, so those are very important bonding moments that I'm sure you ladies can and Michael, you can empathize with it.
Exactly. I made up my own stories as well, and you know, eventually it was interesting because even though my son was like 6 or 7, my daughter, who is older, seemed to enjoy it as much or more sometimes. I think just the attention. I don't know. It was kind of interesting.
I have to weigh in here. This is Deborah, and I think, Michael Loff, you didn't get my email today because I said if there's anything I passionately have to talk about, it's reading. As all of you know, I'm a writer, and so words are of just paramount importance to me, and reading is of paramount importance. So when my children were babies, now you didn't ask ages of our children, but my children are grown. My youngest child is 21. And so we didn't have the print Braille books available. We did for her, but not for my older children. And so initially what I did, I wanted immersion in language for these kids. And I knew my husband was sighted, but I was the stay-at-home parent. And so the first thing that I did is I put Braille, clear Dymo tape, on everything. all the puzzle pieces. I recently found a wooden puzzle that was Big Bird and Elmo and Grover and stuff, and you picked up the pieces, and I had brailled the colors underneath. Yellow bird, you know, blue cookie monster, whatever. And I brailled on the crayons, and I brailled on everything. And because there weren't any storybooks available, I had a volunteer who worked tirelessly with me dictating storybooks, and I brailled the text with picture descriptions on clear plastic, and the clear plastic with the peel-off adhesive, and I stuck that clear plastic right on the print. In the simple baby books where there were simple words, I'd put word right on word later as they were stories. You couldn't do that anymore. It was whole page on whole page. But early on, it was word on word, so I could point to the words and say, dog, cat, you know, whatever. And the payoff has been that, and I am very blessed to be a very fluent Braille reader. So the payoff has been that I read probably thousands of books to my kids as they were growing up. And now everyone is a reader, and reading is a part of what we do. When my youngest child was 10, 11, whatever, when the Harry Potter books were new, I bought the first three in Braille, and I read 2.5 of them in her to Braille, because that's what we did every night. We read every night, and we were into, you know, the bigger books, the Nancy Drew and the Babysitter Club and everything, the books without pictures at this point. And I read her 2.5 of the Harry Potter books, and then I made the mistake of buying them for her in print, so she wasn't going to wait for me anymore, none of this chapter and night stuff. She finished them all and has become one of those Harry Potter fanatics, and she and her sister, my older daughter, were very upset with me that I never finished those books. And so recently, it's been a great joy of the summer, because they gave me CDs, I didn't listen to them. You know, they wanted me to finish Harry Potter so I could talk about it, and I wasn't interested. So about 3 months ago, Caitlin came to me one day and she said, Melinda and I have been talking about it, and we're sick of you not finishing the Harry Potter books. It looks like the only way is I read them to you. So we had a great summer, because we started with number 3, because that's where we had left off, and she read me 3 through 7, and I just think it's so cool, because now, you know, reading is such a part of our family essence that, you know, now she's reading books to me.
And that's what we're striving for. We're striving to get them interested in reading and pursuing it on their own. I got to move on, because there's so many things we've got down here to talk about tonight. I want to talk about schooling. I want to start first with Mike, because you've taken a different path than many folks. So I think a lot of people are interested in it, and that's homeschooling. You've decided to go down that road. So talk about that.
I did, and there were a number of reasons. The first reason, and I have to admit, I came into schooling with my kids with a bit of a bias. I had a terrible time in school when I was a kid, getting Braille books and things like that. So I was kind of jaded, had that kind of, beaten syndrome, where the school system was just not made for us, quote unquote. And unfortunately, when I got into it with my kids, I realized that it wasn't made for us blind parents either. And it took a great deal of education when my children were in school to teach the teachers that I needed stuff electronically. And of course, my oldest is 21, my youngest is 4, and you know, for 21, I had nothing. Couldn't even use a computer hardly. And then as David, my who is now 11, he went to school. They actually, his first teacher was low vision, so they kind of put her with me. Well, you guys know how to talk the same language, so you know. And she would send me stuff, but David ended up getting very bored in school. And by second grade, he was like, Dad, I'm finishing my work. I can't move forward. So I started looking into online programs and found some very cool resources. First, started putting my own curriculums together based on online materials. And then our school here in Orange County in Orlando put together a virtual school through connectionsacademy.com. And that is excellent. All the books are now accessible. When I first started with Connections, it was half and half. Now all the books are ebooks and they're accessible. They're in PDF versions, and I can read them with David. We get to watch a lot of multimedia stuff together. Plus, we have for the things like geometry and things like that that I can't do because they're shapes and all that. He also has a school teacher that's been assigned to him and other kids. And David attends live lessons, of course. So it is a combination of things. But the one thing that's very cool is that besides the curriculum, we get to do a lot of stuff with History Channel. Orlando has a lot of different museums and things like that. So we've really been able to expand on it and do some trips. And it really has built the bond with the kids. And it's hard for, at least for me, I'm sure that you guys have faced the same. What do you do with your kids? I can't go out and throw a ball around with him, you know. And with the girls, it's even harder sometimes. Luckily, my kids are all geeks, so we've got stuff to talk about.
Actually, I did that dangerously enough. Pitched balls to him. Certainly, we didn't, you know, do the whole ball thing, but I would pitch balls to him. And that's what Bill Sparks and I were talking about. That's the one thing both of our sons told us just a couple weeks ago, that's the one thing that they remember that just stands out in their mind. And I quit when he almost broke out a car window. Bill said they actually broke a couple windows in their home, so I guess had to learn from it.
You're overmodulating, Mike.
Okay.
We used to play putt-putt golf. We would go play putt-putt golf, and I stink, you know. I'm, like, not any good, but the kids really got a kick out of, you know, being the one to run ahead and be the beeper at the next hole. And then we bought a backyard croquet set, because it's the same kind of thing. You got to hit the, you know, it's a bigger ball. You got to hit it through the little hoops, and the kids would go lie down on the ground and say, beep, beep, beep.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, and I wasn't any good at it, but it was okay. Because
it was still fun.
They're not.
We played basketball. I mean, we tried. I gave it the Big E, all this stuff, because it was just.
There you go.
I was a kid at heart, I guess, maybe. I didn't get to live up my childhood.
And that's all they care about. You don't have to be any good.
Yeah, you're right. Just the interaction. But I want to, before we move on to homeschool, I just want to mention that. So it does vary from state to state, right? So, I mean, you have to have some mechanism to get a starting point to find out what the requirements are in your state, and you still have to do some testing to make sure your kids are keeping up with everyone else, right? Mikey?
Yeah, well, we actually run with the state curriculum here, so we do the FCAT and all that stuff. But if we decided to go totally off the grid, if you will, the only thing that Florida requires is that your kids, that you keep records, and then so the state is allowed to basically audit you at any time, and then they figure it out when the kid graduates. Every state is different, though. Sometimes they assign a counselor to you in the state that, you know, in the county that you just report to every couple of months. And it really has nothing to do. The cool thing there is it has nothing to do with blindness. I've never been judged by the school system. That's the one place where I got to say that probably people were looking at, oof, thank God, let him take the kid home, you know, because now it wasn't their problem anymore. And I got to say, for the record, when I approached a couple of blindness organizations about addressing the issue, and I know that advocacy has been a part of parents, I was told straight up by the blindness organization that I approached, we will be happy to do this on your behalf, but you've got other kids coming behind this one, and you will be marked, because, you know, they start shaking up stuff and they start asking for accessibility and they start some crap in the school system. So if you're really willing to start the fight, by all means, do it. But if homeschooling is very cool. There's a lot of resources that help you online. So it's not like I'm sitting here in front of a blackboard or a whiteboard all day with David. I'm still able to run the company. I'm still able to work my job. And we've got two more that are headed for homeschool next year. So we'll be homeschooling three by a couple years from now.
And real quickly, I'll ask Deborah and Ricky, if there's any particular issues you've had on the front of public education, either getting handouts and materials and not being able to know what those are. Of course, fortunately today we have scanning OCR technology, but either where you're not getting them from the children or just breakdowns in communication where you have to go in and advocate with the teachers maybe each year.
I took a different approach, and I just want to say my hat's off to you, Mr. Calvo, because I have always thought that homeschooling was just an amazing task that's right for some people and not for others, and I can see that you would be one who could pull it off. But our solution was that we sent our kids to private school, and private schools cost more money, but you have a lot more control because you're a paying, directly paying customer. We're all paying for public schools, but in a private school, you're a directly paying customer and they have to please you. And I, in terms of accessibility, I did different things at different times with the kids, but I used readers and I used scanners. With Caitlin, when she was in grade school, her school started this really cool system that I swear it was made for me. They weren't thinking of me, but it was a voicemail system when this sort of thing was pretty new, and it was called Homework Hotline. And every teacher was required every day to put all the homework assignments on a voicemail message. And so you just called in and dialed the voicemail box of your teacher and listened. And that way, you know, when I would say, what do you have tonight? If she didn't happen to mention, you know, studying for vocabulary tomorrow or, you know, phase one of Project X, I knew I was a step ahead of her. And all the parents really loved it. It was a great system.
And now what they do, Deborah, is they have the learning management systems, the LMS. Like my 15-year-old is in high school, and I can watch her grades, communicate directly with her teachers via email,
yes,
look at all her grades, and say, why didn't you do this? You know, why didn't you do that?
Yeah, I forgot that.
It's all become totally accessible in HTML, so it's very cool. Ricky,
yeah, we
had
that.
Got a word in edgewise here.
Huh? Yeah.
I've been very lucky thus far, because each of the teachers that Kyle has had were very willing to communicate with me, and it's always kind of tradition. You know, each year we go in for open house, and both my husband and myself are there, and the teachers will generally start out talking to my husband and saying, we'll be sending these home and you can look in the folders and sure, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I have to speak up and let them know that while he does help and he does look at things that like how things have been drawn or handwriting or that kind of thing, he will check the homework. But I'm usually the one making sure that it gets done. And so we have to establish that from the outset at the beginning. But all of the teachers thus far have had web pages where they will post the homework assignments for the week. And Kyle himself is actually good about when we sit down, he will read the directions both to me and himself. And I've just kind of made it a practice to do that, not only because it helps me to know what the directions are, but it helps him too. It really helps
Absolutely.
Him stay on task to have to read that and read it out loud and not be allowed to skip over something.
What about extracurricular activities? I mean, I know we could talk all night, so I have to keep moving, but what about extracurricular activities such as, I don't know, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, or, you know, baseball, or, you know, Little League, or did you do anything? Ricky, you had Kyle and Cub Scouts, right?
Kyle is a Cub Scout, yes. And that is one thing that I'm perfectly okay as that being something that he and his dad do primarily, although I do go for the big den meetings once a month, and I'm there for the popcorn sales, and I've even done things like take Eddie, my guide dog, in and present to the scouts, because part of earning their badges is learning about people with disabilities and different ways of doing things, and it's always a lot of fun to do that.
Walking the blind lady across the street.
I
have the books all in Braille too, Ricky. All the different. I mean, but they're humongous, of course.
Because
right, they've got them in Braille and in audio format, I believe.
Yes,
but I want to say something about that though, because this relates to school and extracurricular. I had something negative happened that I won't go into, but it was, you know, when my oldest child was 4, I put her in the wrong school with a really idiotic teacher who thought her mom didn't do squat, and the message came home loud and clear. So when she was in the next school in kindergarten, I decided I'm going to start inviting myself to go in and make a presentation. And I did that every year, because what I realized is children are so quick to get it and to accept and to understand that we're just regular people who don't see. And teachers have a much harder time. But if the kids are smarter than the teachers, you know, it really pays off for your kids. So I started
Absolutely.
Every year, I just started inviting myself and saying to the teacher, could I come in and do a presentation on blindness? And I always ended with a storybook, a print Braille storybook. But I'd talk about Braille, and I'd talk about how I do things, and I'd introduce my guide dog and all that stuff. And I knew it was a good thing when my oldest child was in fourth or fifth grade, and I hadn't been to school in a little while. And one night she said, Mom, I think you need to come to school. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, everybody used to be so cool, but all of a sudden they're asking me stupid questions again, like, how does your mom make your lunch? And, you know, and who does this for you and who does that? And she said, I think you need to come to school. So I did. I went to school, and I told the kids that. I said, I understand there's some people here that want to know who makes Melinda's peanut butter sandwiches. Let's talk about it. And, you know, and it's really, and one thing, if anybody listening does this, or if, Ricky, you decide to start doing it, one thing that's really cool to say to the kids, because it gets into the teacher's ear, is say to the kids, you know, when you go home, you are going to be so much smarter than your parents, because your parents probably don't know that a guide dog can't read the walk sign, or that, you know, you know, and I think of different things that, you know, people make assumptions about us, and it would get back to me that little kids were going home and saying that stuff to their parents. I bet you don't know this. Well, I know this. So anyway, there you go. And it would also, I think, kind of shame the teacher into getting a clue.
Shaming can be good. Do you use, any of you want to comment on, have you network with other parents, either blind parents to learn tips and tricks from them, or just other sighted parents in your community, either for transportation purposes, to get to different events or something? I know it's something that Bill and I have talked about, and each of us had done. So we, you know, having a sighted spouse, sometimes it still wasn't convenient to get to different events, scouting and so forth. So did any of you do that as well?
I did both things. I networked with blind parents, and I did that through being a part of mailing lists that I discovered when I was pregnant and looking for information about how blind folks might do things differently, or, you know, just the little tips and tricks. And besides that, I wanted to be able to communicate with other parents, blind or not. In any case, I started with a blind parents mailing list. I later hosted a blind parents voice chat on For the People, where we would get together weekly and just talk about different things. And it really turned out to be more of a virtual play group and sort of parents talking session than it was sharing tips and tricks, because it turned out that while there were things that we did do differently than our sighted counterparts, there were a lot of things that we did the same, and we just kind of wanted to get together and talk about our kids. But I also networked with people in the community. I never really went to any of the mommy and me playgroup type things, just because I didn't necessarily want to spend a lot of time with people that I'd never met before and might not have anything in common.
Oh, with. You're just a geek, man. You wanted to stay home and play on the computer.
No. I
totally understand.
Because
you'd wind up sitting in the corner is what would happen.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to spend time with people that I had actually met before, and it turns out that I had met quite a few people who were parents with kids the same age as mine were. And so we would create our own little play dates. You know, this week we'll meet at my house, and the next week we'll meet at so-and-so's house. And in those situations, the people knew me, and so I never had to spend this time where my kid's playing, so, you know, theoretically I could relax or whatever. I never had to spend that time being an advocate or educating other people on what it was like to be a blind parent. And I do think that's necessary, but there were times I just wanted to relax and be myself, and I was able to do that.
Yeah, I did that too. When, you know, we had a play group that was only three moms.
When you hear that echo, Mikey's biting out the chub there to. Oh, okay.
That's. Yeah. I think it was Sorry. Me.
That's
I think
Mike. No, that echo means Mikey wants to talk.
I had a playgroup with three moms where we just rotated houses, and it was great because, you know, we all were friends and the kids were friends, and it was, like you said, Ricky, it was easy to just kick back and relax. But those That's were sighted moms. The blind parents, I'm so happy to hear you say that there are lists and so forth, because I've been thinking about this recently because I just met the daughter of someone else who was in this group I was in the 90s. There was, this was before we had, you know, listservs and everything. There was a blind couple in Arizona who started this wonderful parent newsletter on tape. And they would send the tape out to people every month, but how it worked was you would record on your own tape stories or questions, and you'd send them back, and they'd compile them. They'd edit them and compile them. So you felt like you had this network of families all over the country that you got to know their kids, and that was blind parent. That was that and my articles in Dialogue, I think, before internet lists was all that blind parents had.
And yeah, and I think the internet has helped tremendously in that respect. Because you can meet people from all over the world. I mean, I knew people from New Zealand and the UK, and I felt like I knew them just as them and their children just as well as I knew the people I spent time with in my own town.
See, I felt that, you know, of course, it sounds like you ladies were plugged in pretty well into the community. I came, as you guys know, pretty late in the game into being plugged in and was amazed at what parents were doing. And I think that community has really, really helped me a lot. And of course, which is why Serotech and what we do is so important, and tech chats like this, because I think that the power of community is it. It's what we can learn from one another, how we don't have to redo what's been done already. We can just learn from somebody else, and you don't feel like you're kind of a lone ranger anymore.
But I think in terms of community in the larger sense, like the huge community of where you live, for me, I'm basically a shy person. And I did things when my children were in elementary school that I have never done since and that I would never have believed before I could do. I mean, I got myself into the community so that they would be connected. And it sounds, Ricky, like you're doing some of the same kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It makes perfect sense to me.
I have to ask you, Deborah and Mikey, about the infamous teenage years.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'll let Mike go first.
Oh, I've got, you know, right now, the big thing, of course, and you know, with Michael, with my 21-year-old, just for the record, I have a 21-year-old and a 15-year-old, a 21-year-old, a 15-year-old, 11-year-old, 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And the 21-year-old was pretty mellow. He was a gamer from when he was young. David is also pretty geeky. So all of the and my daughter Roxana is a typical teenager, always texting and all that stuff. So based on, you know, parental type controls, we can pretty much monitor what's going on there and know what's happening through monitoring their electronic communications. I really haven't found that much of a challenge. I have good kids, and we've just got the opinionated kids, but by and large, my kids are pretty homebound, and you know, their worst sin is being on the internet at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, we shut down the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'd say pretty much the same thing. I mean, I was very blessed that my kids have all been really good. You know, nobody's been into trouble. The worst trouble we ever had was my son writing a computer. He's a programmer, and he wrote a computer program that if it had run would have destroyed the school's system. So that wasn't cool. We had to have, like, you know, a little kangaroo court thing over there at school, and they were going to kick him out, and it was really bad. That was the worst thing any of them ever did. And he swore that he wasn't going to run it. He just wrote it to see if he could. But
one of my kids tethered when they when we turned off the internet for them, they learned how to tether their cell phone.
Oh, yeah, they're so smart.
Oh,
they're
you
so
are in a house full of geeks, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and I will say that one thing now that I have had with Caitlin that I didn't have with her brother and sister, and I don't know how parents of teenagers lived without it, is the cell phone. Because she bugged, and I finally bought her a cell phone when she was a freshman in high school. And it was the smartest thing I ever did, because when she wanted to go home with somebody after school, she called me, and wherever she was, she called me, I called her, and I knew where she was, and it was wonderful. So, I mean, I think that cell phones for kids who are younger is maybe a mistake, but because you pretty much can keep tabs on them, because you're collecting them and everything, but for a teenager, that was a really cool link. And the other thing is, back to what I said about when they were small, the best thing you can do is to make your place the place everybody wants to come. So if they're all coming to your house, because you don't get, as a blind parent, you don't get to drive everybody to soccer practices and hear the conversations. That's what other parents get that we don't. So if your house is the house where they want to come to hang, to watch the movies, to play the computer games, whatever, then you get to overhear those snippets of what's going on and who's talking to who and who's cool and who's not and all that stuff.
That's a great point. That's happening already, even at this young age. I'm able to sit downstairs and Kyle will have two or three friends over and I can observe what they're doing. And they're upstairs, and so to them, they're perfectly private. Yeah, I mean, to them, they're perfectly private because they can't see me. I'm not in the room.
Yeah, but what else I occasionally did is you could plant a tape. Now with digital recording, it's so much easier. I used to sometimes put a tape recorder under the bed when they had sleepovers.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Because they didn't know. And then I'd hear part of the conversation. I'd think, oh, they're so cute. They're so wholesome. Why was I worried? But, oh, well, I'm glad I did. I'm glad I listened. Because
it's one of the neat things to be able to listen in and be able to jump in at the appropriate points. And they kind of think, wow, how did you know? And that's one interesting thing for us is that when it comes to whether or not Kyle has ever taken advantage of my blindness or not, that's never really come up as an issue, except for one quick funny story that I'll share in a second. But generally, he has been caught, I guess, in certain things, like I didn't hear him turn off the light and he said he did, and things like that, where I would just know that I caught him often enough that after a while, it never occurred to him. He's like, I'm not going to get anything past her just because she's blind. And
yes,
I never made an issue of, don't trick your mother because she's blind. It's more like, you should listen to me because I'm your mother. There is one really interesting point or interesting story that Kyle was about 2 years old. And we had this routine where we would clean up the living room and his job was to pick up his toys and put them in the box and then I would vacuum. And he knew this routine well and was not particularly fond of it, except for one day he was really happy to start picking everything up and he was doing it all efficiently and I was like, wow, good job. So I get out the vacuum and vacuum the living room and I turn it off. And I go into the kitchen to clean that, and there he is. He has climbed up on the counter and gotten the sugar bowl for the coffee and was just having a blast with it. But it was clear that he knew I couldn't hear what was going on with the vacuum going, and I think he knew I couldn't see what was going on. You know, he knew if he got me distracted with the vacuum, he'd be able to do this. So he planned it.
Yes. Well, we're going to take questions shortly. I just have to ask if any of you had problems like with in-laws or just family members that just felt they knew and were sure they had a better way, something you should be doing that you're not?
I have to tell a positive story. My answer to that question is no. And on the other hand, a positive story. With my first baby, when it was time for food, real food, I struggled and struggled and tried to figure it out, and I finally figured out the method for feeding her with a spoon was to stand behind her high chair, put her in a high chair, stand behind her, and feed her as if to feed myself. And I'm right-handed, so the right hand wields the spoon, and the left hand would touch her chin so that I could guide it in. And my mother-in-law one time was feeding her and didn't know that and sat in front of her and fed her and wondered why the baby was waiting instead of leaning into this, you know. So anyway, we talked about it, and from then on, every sighted person, my mother-in-law, who only visited a few times, you know, a year, but everybody was so respectful of that, that they realized that they had to do things my way, which was, you know, to stand behind her and feed her that way. And in the same way, like the holding hands thing, I had a rule of everybody hold hands wherever we go. And my husband, even though he was sighted and could let them out of the car when they were bigger and let them run, he knew it was important to maintain that rule. So everybody held hands to the point that, you know, they're 12 and they're still holding your hand. Anyway, but I think it's really, if you can get everybody who's related on board that, okay, what I do works and it's a little different, but I have to do it this way, so back me up. And in my case, I was very blessed that everybody did.
I think for me, there was a lot of trepidation from my husband's family and from mine, surprisingly enough, even though I had babysat all my nieces and nephews growing up, and suddenly I was going to have one of my own. And again, there was a little bit of trepidation. You know, I guess before they thought, well, it's only a couple of hours and I'll be back to get the child. So it's not like she has to take care of the kid 24/7. Now, how's she going to do this for her own? But it only took a month or so into the pregnancy, and they would talk to me, and I would basically say, you know, oh, I've done this, and I've bought this, and I've researched what kind of swing I want, and this and that and the other. And they all kind of loosened up and thought, well, I don't know how she's going to do it, but ultimately it doesn't matter if I understand it or not. She clearly seems to have a plan of action, and so I'll just stand back and watch. And they did.
Mikey's quiet. It's always good with the in-laws. That's good.
I had some challenges in my first marriage. In my second marriage, no, I really haven't. You know, remember, I'm the dad, though, so we get a lot less of it than the moms. You know, of course, you know, there was always a concern when I was alone with the baby, but that comes from anybody. I mean, that's just when you're a guy. Everybody's worried when you're alone with the babies. So
yeah.
You know, but I, you know, my big thing, the problems, I think, at least in my case, the reality of the trepidation of my parents-in-law weren't the fact that I was a blind parent. They were the fact that I was just a blind husband, period. So, you know, that really has nothing to do with it. I mean, the blind parent part of it was just a little more bias on top of the bias that I was not dating their daughter. I was married to their daughter now. So it was which is a very interesting observation that I made, which I'd get into at another time. But
I want to share a story based on it. By the way, we have opened up questions here if any of our 10 participants wish to ask anything. But I adopted my wife's daughter, and I was just ready for the third degree, and it was starting out with the social worker, and fortunately for me, I smelled my son's diaper, and I dealt with that, and somehow just the social worker seeing that interaction, I mean, taking care of business and then just loving on him afterward, kind of closed the deal. So that was pretty cool. Mm. We actually have a question here, so let's see what this is. Do you have suggestions for monitoring your kids' media habits, such as music, movies, games, or the internet? That's a very good question.
Sure. Actually, there's a number of monitoring programs that are out there. I'd rather not go into the ones I use, just because you never know which one of my kids may get a hold of this. But there are a number of them, and there are a lot of them that are accessible. And you can do things through your routers. I know when my daughter's been up collecting stuff on P2P networks, for example, and I'll tell her, hey, get off of there. You're going to get me in serious trouble, you know, or whatever. And you can do everything from monitor their MSN traffic to what websites they're going to what files they're modifying on their network. And you can either do it at a network level or an individual stealth computer level. And that's all I'll say about that.
Any thoughts from you, Deborah?
Well, again, because of the ages of my kids, only with my youngest one has this been an issue, because my son was such a programmer, but, you know, there wasn't all the internet and everything so much yet when he was a teenager. But with Caitlin, what I did with her is I signed her up for AOL, and I couldn't use it. I had to have other friends come and check periodically. But I signed her up for AOL because at the time there was so much kid monitoring on AOL that I figured it was the safest route. I might write a lot about technology, but I'm not really a geek. And I worried about, knowing enough. So that was the solution with her. Now, what I did later was I actually used System Access to go in and check her computer when she didn't know. But I don't want to talk too much about that because she might hear this someday. So, when your kids aren't aware that there's access on their computers and, you kind of can slip in there when they're not around and check it out. So that's all I have to say about that.
That is a very good question. Even when I was in radio and my daughter approached 13, 14, and I became very conscious of just the suggestiveness of the lyrics. Nothing like a lot of the music you could stumble upon today, but a good point about movies or kids sneaking and watching things on TV. I remember once my daughter was like 9, and remember the old TVs, I don't think the new ones do, but the old ones, you know, they'd put out this high pitch frequency at 15.750. And so she thought she'd just watch TV without the sound and all was good. But she didn't know that I could just walk right in and go, wouldn't you like to have the sound up on that? And
oh, yeah.
You know you're not supposed to be watching that.
Yeah. TVs don't
make any noise. You can't tell when they're on anymore.
Right. I know. Isn't that horrible?
They took away that great tool.
How dare they take that out?
And Caitlin had a best friend who was hearing impaired, so she learned all about closed captioning. That was a problem because she did do that. She watched some programs, but she made the mistake of bragging to her friend whose mom was my friend. so I learned. But I mean, yeah. And I would say, actually, that's probably the most blindness-related thing any of my kids ever did, was she had this era when she was in about 9th or 10th grade where she watched some programs with closed captioning. But the music, I am a music lover myself, and so my kids grew up on my music, which was good. I mean, it's good according to me, you know, but my kids are all great fans of folk and folk rock and musicals, you know, Broadway musicals and so forth, and that's what they prefer, so there wasn't much of a problem. I mean, even though Caitlin's 21, that's when I get into...
Wait till they start listening to Tupac Shakur and all that stuff, man. And
yeah, I mean, I get into her car and what she's playing is Disney's greatest hits.
Wow.
You're a lucky woman there.
I know. She thinks I'm a moron because a song will play and I'll say, that's a really cool song. Which one's that from? And she'll say, oh, Beauty and the Beast. What? Don't you know anything? Yeah, so anyway. So I never had the music.
Well, I would encourage people, one thing that we're going to add is an interview I did with Bill Sparks and Jeannie Mader. And as we'll find out, some of us did not have as fortunate of experiences. And I would encourage folks to listen to that because, remember, you're blind parents and that's awesome and we can do a great job. But, you know, our kids are in society and they certainly will do many of the things that other kids will do. And I think it'll be a great addendum to the great information that we've covered here as well. not sure what to conclude on other than, you know, we posted at least four different links here of stories, unfortunate stories where children were either taken from their parents or at least the threat was there of being taken from their parents. And I'm sure everyone could talk an hour each on that, but it is a little disconcerting. And, you know, I don't know, you know, how you would approach something like that if that happened to you. And, you know, that's where we all need to be advocates and use the internet and social networking to communicate that, that these things aren't right. But then also the unfortunate reality that maybe there are some blind parents, just as there are some sighted persons, who really aren't ready to take on the responsibility of a child, or they live in just an unhealthy situation or whatever the case may be. You know, and I'm sure I'll get some hate mail from that, but, you know, I'm a realist. I've seen all sides of the coin here.
I think it's really important, Mike. I mean, we've all seen blind parents who think it's really cool to use their children as guides and readers and all that stuff. And I think what I would want people to think about more than anything else is that parenting is absolutely the most important and most fabulous job you will ever do. And like any job, you need to train yourself. You need to be ready. And, I mean, maybe that sounds kind of Pollyanna-ish, but I think, you know, no matter, I don't care if you're blind or you're quadriplegic or you have 42 heads or what the deal is, if you're going to raise a child, the child comes first, and your responsibility is to give that child the most full experience of childhood you can. And sometimes that means working a little harder and putting your own needs on hold.
We have any final comments from anyone here? Each of you, I'll let each of you maybe cover some issue I haven't addressed or just anything you want to leave the audience with. Start with you, Miss Ricky.
Well, I could probably talk about three more hours on lots of this stuff. But what I do want to say is there isn't a need to feel like you are alone as a blind parent or that you are a pioneer. There are lots of us. And that's one thing I didn't know when I was growing up. I never knew any other blind parents. And so I felt like I was embarking on a journey that, oh, nobody had ever done before. And I'm going to have to figure out all of
totally
this myself.
Yeah.
And it's simply not true. There are mailing lists. There are forums, even on the SAMNet forums, there is a parents group. And there are sighted parents who may not understand what you have to do differently, but can be very supportive. So learn that there is a support network out there and use it.
And sometimes you can teach. I mean, sometimes as blind parents, because we maybe work a little extra hard, if you reach out to other parents, they'll wind up asking you questions and, you know, realize that you figured out something that they haven't.
Oh, yeah. That does happen a lot, actually.
I would like to close, Michael, by just putting out a challenge to the community. I think Serotech and Serotalk have been a great resource for people getting in touch, people being entertained and all that. And I would challenge some very spirited individual or individuals to really put together, whether it be a podcast or chats, whatever, and really dedicate some time in our community atmosphere to really opening up and having candid discussions about this on a pretty regular basis, to where people are having kids all the time. So while these things are important to look back at, you know, a year from now or 6 months from now, ongoing information, things change all the time. And I would encourage blind folks to take advantage of resources like Serotalk and other community projects out there for the blind that would help us get more together as a community and more integrated and just being able to help each other with more information.
I guess my closing thoughts would be, first of all, don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it. There's going to be situations that are going to come up, whether you need a ride to that soccer game or what have you. Bill made a very good point of there was a lot of great help through being involved with a church. And again, that's a personal choice,
yes,
but it was a great resource that a few folks have mentioned to me as far as just having a network of people, you know, if you needed assistance, and especially in their case, both being blind parents. But either way, it's a nice resource to have some friends and use that and interact and get to know the parents, as all of you have indicated, you know, of your children's friends. And it's a great way to break the ice barrier, you know, break down the barriers of blindness. And ongoing education, by all means, seize the opportunity to speak. I'm like, Deborah, I love to speak to kids. They're uninhibited. They just ask the questions that are on their mind, and adults gasp, and I'm loving it. You know, I'm like, great, you just spit it out. That's what I want to hear. You know, how do you use the bathroom? Well, we'll find it.
Yes.
We'll find a way to answer that question.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's great because.
And how do you drive a car?
You know, one of the things that I think that we need to do too in one of these forums, Michael, is we've talked so much tonight, and I think that our experiences have been positive. I think that at one point we really need to address some of the negative aspects of blind parenting and how we've dealt with the social worker that doesn't think that you can take care of a kid, or the school teacher that doesn't think that you're capable of parenting, and that kind of thing, and how we've gotten around that in more depth, and because there are several blind people whose kids have been taken away at birth, and they've had to fight like hell to get them back. So
yes.
I wouldn't want anybody who ever hears this archive in the future to think, oh, you know, blind parenting's a piece of cake. No, unfortunately, you know, you got to take this kingdom by force. And it's like anything else, unfortunately, for us blind folks, we really kind of have to prove ourselves in many ways. So being connected, being informed of your rights as a blind parent, and what they are, and knowing other parents and knowing organizations that will help you advocate in your local city, in your state, even at a federal level, is real important. So I'd love to see us do this again. Perhaps with this has been a very positive experience, but addressing some of the negative aspects of blind parenting and how we've dealt with it.
So exactly, if you're sitting on the other side, maybe your experience hasn't been so positive, or you have some personal accounts of some problems, we'd certainly like to hear from you. Resources@serotalk.com. Maybe you'd like to come on and be a guest in a future presentation where we delve into the other side where things were not so rosy. Definitely. Well, folks can certainly go to the tech chat room with SamNet and continue the discussion as we do after our weekly tech chats. I want to thank all of you, Mike Calvo, Ricky Inger, and Deborah Kendrick, for coming and sharing your personal experiences with us this evening. Again, we invite you to join us next week for Tech Chat 73, as we'll talk about video magnifiers. And 21st is still open, and the 28th we will do our This Month in Access Tech and talk about all the new cool stuff, whatever it may be, that comes our way during the month of October. And so until we meet again next week, let's stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.